Welcome to the Welsby Shift podcast, business and life coaching that works. We are Amanda Welsby and Emma Welsby, two sisters with one goal, to share tools that may help make navigating life easier. Who you are filters into everything you are and do, whether it be your work life or family life. We help to surface strategies that may assist you in finding ways that improve outcomes and make life and work feel a whole lot more manageable. In each podcast, we will discuss common life topics with insights that may help to make your life an easier place to be. Welcome to the Welsby Shift podcast. So today we are talking on the topic of shame. We all feel shame at one point or another. So this is going to be fun.
Yeah, Emma, are you ready for a tough one?
No, but we're doing it anyway.
Yep. Do you know why you're not ready for a tough one? Or can I tell you why you might not be ready for a tough one?
Yeah, go on then. Go on then.
Well, both of us come from a place that in which shame is a dominant emotion, a dominant negative emotion amidst others. So some people have a primary emotion of anger, and we've talked about that. Others have a primary emotion that's more around fear. We've talked about that. And this one is the third one, and we both sit in that place. So it might be hard to talk about.
Yeah, I'm happy to own my crap though, so...
Well, and that's part of the benefit of having done the work, right? That's actually a really interesting point. Well, let's talk about our experiences of shame. Emma, what's your experience of shame as you identify it, at least in this moment?
Shame for me is when I have done behaviors that somebody pulls me up on and they tell me that it was a bit crap, and when I look at it, I have to agree. It's like, yeah, that was kind of rubbish. It's taken me a long time to get to the point of not like feeling the shame and be defensive or bend the truth about what it actually was.
Okay.
I am now able to look at it and say, do you know what? You're right. It was bad. Like, hands up. And I'm okay. I can deal with my shame. Like, I'm comfortable with my shame.
Oh, can I draw a distinction and definition here?
Mm-hmm.
So I think what you are talking about there is what I would call being ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
Being ashamed is where you feel some appropriate guilt about some of your own behavior.
Yeah.
But your behavior is not your identity, right? It's not the essence of Emma.
Yeah.
So I'd like to suggest to you that shame is something that is put on us by others and co-opted by ourselves as a belief about the essence of me.
Yes.
That is almost always not true.
Yes. So what I was saying is I used to feel it, and then I've managed to come back from that, if you know what I mean, because I know what I am now.
So am I hearing then that you can separate what is about your behavior that may genuinely, I mean, you said, I realized my behavior was a bit shit, right? Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is appropriate, being appropriately ashamed of something I've done versus who you are. So for me, if I can just throw in something here, when I think about times that I have felt what I call genuine shame, is when, for example, I have not understood something, particularly in my formative years. Like I struggled with maths as a kid, right? Absolutely sure I am undiagnosed numerically dyslexic. There's just no doubt about it in my mind. And because I was not able to do the math, chop, 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 like I expected to be able to, because I struggled, and because some, key figures in my life couldn't understand why I couldn't understand, I felt shame over that. I think that another great example is the feeling you get when you have been bullied. Because that is actually one of the ultimate shame inducers. You are being bullied because of who you are walking along the street, in my case,
It's horrible.
right? That I had an English accent in a Scottish school, for example, that I lived in a bigger than average house. It was just about things that I could not change. So bullying is, and that throws a lot of shame.
Yes, I have that one exactly about the size of the house. Let's like it wasn't a mansion. It's just a bit bigger. But yeah, it's shame seems to move throughout the years. Like obviously your sense of shame as a child kind of starts out and then it kind of sets the scene for your life. But it moves and changes as you grow older, I think, depending on
Yes.
how much work you've done.
Yes. It does. It does. And it influences how you deal with shaming messages that you receive later on in life. So, to take a step into that space, shame is one of the, if not the most commonly used tool, I think, to control children. Right? We say, don't do that. That was stupid. That was silly, And it becomes an attack on, or, it's not intended. It's unintended messages, right, that we pick up. And we pick up these unintended messages because when we're children, we grow up in those formative years believing that the world revolves around us, right? And so the affirmation of ourselves as individuals, usually expressed through, approval or connection or love, when that is broken by these messages that are thrown out there, like, you ought to be able to do this math, Amanda. It causes Amanda to then question her value as an individual. There's something wrong with me because I can't do X, Y, or Z. Right? And so that's where it comes from. And then, what we experience shame over, those messages that cause us shame, we repress. And so for me, that meant that I wasn't good enough, could not meet expectations. And so instead of like addressing that message, I just tried harder and harder in covert ways to prove that I was good enough or was lovable or could fulfill expectations in different ways, right?
The I am enough statement, as I
Yes.
am.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that this is the key difference, Emma, between fear and shame. And this occurred to me as I was percolating on doing this podcast, and after we recorded the fear one, as you had brought up that am I enough question, right? And I think that the difference between fear and shame, or one of the key differences, is that fear worries that something might be true. So there's a fear that it might be affirmed in the future, right? I'm afraid of something that might happen or might be true. Where shame says, you are not enough. I am not. It is a present state of being, not just a potential. And I think that's a key difference between fear and shame.
So it's brutal as a child, really. I think everybody has to walk those corridors because that you have to tell the child what the social norms are.
Yes.
And it has to be backed up with like what the issue is, and then backed up with love as well.
Yes. So it's not actually about what you're trying to teach, it's about the way you try to teach it. I
Exactly.
think that's a critical point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe, I know you have little ones at home, Emma. When your 3-year-old is having a meltdown, how do you try to handle that?
Yeah. Honestly, I wait it out. If I can't reach him because his amygdala is just running the show, he literally is like his ears don't work anymore. I just have to tell him, like I'll just told you until this is finished, and then we can talk, and then explain things. And it, do you know, it's fascinating about how when I ask him what it is that was perhaps not the best that he'd done, sometimes he says something else completely, which is so far removed from what the situation was. So he doesn't even really know what the problem was, even though it's
Can you
been
think of an
explained.
example off the top of your head?
Literally, he hit daddy in the face. So obviously, we use the timeout step. So he goes on the timeout step and he's on the timeout step for hitting daddy in the face, and we've explained it all. And then we go back to him and it's like, okay, do you know why you're on the timeout step? And he says something else. It's like, but we just
Yeah.
explained to you why you're here 3 minutes ago. So you can see how, like, even from a small age, the is bonkers. The brain is bonkers. Like, they can't hold on to anything. And you can see how all those mixed messages can create beliefs about oneself, and that wasn't ever what was intended. So, yeah, sometimes, like, when he's super upset, we just wait it out and we hold him until it's finished and then talk to him about what the issue was.
And that's the thing, right? You're talking to him about the behavior, right? So it's
Yes.
very different to say, it is not okay to hit daddy in the face. That's different from saying, you are a naughty boy,
Yes, it is.
right? So the you are a naughty boy is like a universal message that, there's risk that he would take on. Right, I am a naughty person.
And that stays
And
for life.
yes, it does. And yeah, I can think of somebody we both know very well, actually, I think, who took on that message that she was a naughty girl at a very young age. And yeah, I mean, she's worked through a lot of that, but that belief that fundamentally, she wasn't okay, or didn't have anything positive to add to the world, really
Yeah.
affected her as she went
Yeah.
through life. So, yeah. So, I mean, so I was thinking about some of the other shaming or things that I've felt. I guess what I'm trying to say is I've done a lot of work with shame in my life and how it's played out. And because I've done the work, I don't actually hold the shame for some of those things that I once did. And so, you know, one of the examples might be that I held a tremendous amount of shame for the fact that I would steal some, you know, nominal amounts of money from my mother in particular when I was, you know, a young age, like kind of that 10, 11, 12 age. And I felt a lot of shame. I couldn't understand, going back to the whole understanding, couldn't understand why I did that. I really didn't. Before that, I have an even earlier memory of not understanding why I was coming home from school every day with all of the polish rubbed off the toes of my shoes. And the message I got was, I should know, I ought to know. And I literally didn't. And it was only after, you know, I think mum asked school if they had any idea, because I was literally putting holes through my leather shoes. Like, you know, I can understand why my mother was upset about this, right? But we had been playing mummies and daddies in the playground. And I guess I had been the baby. So I'd been crawling along, dragging my feet behind me. I literally had no clue. But I was so, you know, yeah, felt a lot of shame about that. Gosh, I was 4 or 5 years old, that memory is. And then the stealing, I was in my 30s when I finally understood that the reason I had done that was all around my sense of belonging when we moved to Scotland from London. Do you know, I took a lot of that money and I didn't keep it. I gave it away to other people because I was buying love. I was trying to
Literally
buy
with
love with
the
that. Right.
oh my
Yep,
God.
which is classic for my personality type, right? That feeling unloved and not worthy of love and feeling so bullied and rejected in a Scottish school. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Scottish schools, but just understand, you know, it would be like for an American equivalent. It's at the age of 8 when I moved from 500 miles from England into Scotland, it would be a bit like a kid from Mississippi moving to Chicago. And I don't think I have to explain anything more. I think Americans would understand what that might look and feel like. So, but it was, I ha carried that shame about having stolen from my mother and not understanding why for decades until I understood that it was all around my sense of belonging. And then I was able to let it go. And so, but it was hard work to address what those shame messages were that I was carrying so close to my heart in shadow because it was so scary to look at them. I don't know if you've held anything like that, Emma, or thoughts about that. But.
Not any as bad as that.
Yeah.
But what I'm curious to ask you is so obviously that's like heavy levels of shame, based around childhood events. So how would shame then translate into adult life. So in terms of like how you're running your life, how you're running your business, like
So this core belief that I am not enough or not worth enough has translated into not having enough confidence to push myself forward. So, for example, I mean, we kind of laugh about it now. Like, I'm the corporate girl in the family, right? And the rest of you have all developed your own businesses, ideas, and been successful with that. I had never seen myself as an entrepreneur ever, because I'm not willing to take the risk, because of those shaming messages, not willing to take the risk of putting myself out there and selling my wares, if you like, out of fear of rejection. And I think that with the stories I've just told you, I don't need to explain why I have that inner fear of rejection. And so, yeah, that risk is that my effort to connect with others won't be enough to get what I want and need. And I'm afraid to ask for what I want and need, or at least, I'm not afraid in the same way that I have been, but it's something I have to be very conscious about. So in the corporate setting, I'm already there. There's much less risk in asking for what I want or need in that setting, though I have also needed to be very careful about not becoming the yes woman. Because people quickly learn that I am, in fact, highly capable and very reliable, and someone that they can ask to get something done and it will get done. And then on the other side of that, there's the resentment that comes from, why am I always the one that's doing? Well, actually, I'm always the one that's doing, because I'm the one that has proved that I will always do, because that is how I receive the validation of my existence, basically. That's a good work example. In my personal life, I was married to an alcoholic, and I am absolutely sure that part of the attraction there was the idea, the perception that somehow how I could help him with his issues. I needed to be needed. And in that process, you kind of sacrifice yourself. And I have to own that. That's not his fault. I did that to myself. I had to do that work around the codependency. So that's me. Like, I will externalize my shame and try and get other people to fulfill my ego need, which isn't bad, it's necessary, but for love and connection and all the rest of it, right? There are some people who are more likely to repress and just avoid their shame completely, right? They relentlessly pursue success, or the outward image of success, in order to kind of cover for their own inner world of inadequacy, trying to kind of outrun shame. But you know what? Wherever you go, there you are. And eventually, you can't outrun that shame, and you can't perform and perform and perform and perform without burning out. And then that burnout validates that inner message of worthlessness that they have for themselves, that inner emptiness. And unless you address it and reframe those messages and understand who you really are, the essence of you, then it's going to become self-fulfilling. And then there's other folks that might be a little more like you, Emma, who internalize their shame to the greatest degree, and feel like have this sense of, I'm inherently flawed or defective, and kind of swim in an inner morass of messy, negative feelings that they put on themselves, like believe that they must be solely responsible for. and live in that world rather than like, so whereas I will try and get those perspectives corrected, you're more likely to live in that world and believe that it's true. And I simply am not enough and I never will be. Is that true for
Yeah,
you?
that's exactly it. Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. So how do we get to, healing this shame? What are the steps for doing that? I mean, I guess we've talked through some of them already. I think one of the critical ones is to separate what is shame, i.e., messages put onto us by other people,
Yeah.
and what I genuinely own and am ashamed, appropriately guilty for doing. The behaviors that I may have expressed that were inappropriate.
Yeah. Well, there's generally a few things that you can do. So one is the whole self-compassion thing, which some people can cringe at this. I used to cringe at it, but actually, if you treat yourself as you would a friend with kindness and understanding, that goes a long way. It can be incredibly difficult to do that because if your inner monologue is negative, negative, negative all the time, it feels alien and it does feel kind of cheesy and awkward. But if it feels awkward, then there you have it. There is your problem. So start doing it and feel awkward, and all of a sudden things might start improving for you because you're getting out of your own dirty pit.
Right. Yeah, actually, to add to that, one of the key things that I've taught in different settings, actually completely different sections, is a compliment is a gift to you. Okay. If I was to wrap up a present for you right now and give it to you, would you stand on it?
Nope.
I'm hoping that you would say, "Oh, thank you. Can I open this now?" Right? A gift, treat a compliment as the gift that it is, including the compliments that you give yourself.
Exactly. It's so difficult to do. I would love to know what the percentage of people were out there that can actually do this. I imagine it's probably quite low.
Yeah. Well, and that's why in one of the other settings that you and I have run in, we focus on I am statements, positive I am statements.
Yeah.
And that's about giving yourself affirmation of who you are. That is a shame lifter in
Yeah.
and of itself.
Exactly. Another thing that you can do is you say a problem shared is a problem halved, but like talking about your shame with other people, because sometimes people looking from the outside in, they'll be like, wow, really? Like, I don't see this at all, you know? It can put things in perspective for you.
Yeah, and it would have to be somebody that you implicitly trust, right? Because there is a risk. There's a risk. There's a reason we hide our shame. Because there's a risk of bringing it out into the open. So generally, I would say don't be sharing those or trying to resolve those shame messages with the person who gave you that message about yourself. They are not the person to do that with.
No. That's just
Yeah.
going to open up a whole can of worms and make it a lot worse, probably.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. If you didn't get the validation, the message, the appropriate message from that person then, it's very unlikely you're going to get it now.
No.
So.
So some of the other things we can do as well is name the shame. Just name it. It is what it is. Here we go. Let's sort it out. It's kind of like catching yourself doing things, like your triggers and all those things. And when it happens, get curious rather than hurt yourself about it.
Yes. Yeah, anything else?
And lastly is just challenging your inner critic. Just tell it to pipe down and have more of a positive view. Because our
For
inner
some
critic
people,
does.
that inner critic is like a parrot on their shoulder, doing this
Oh
all the time.
yeah. It can be brutal. And that is the thing that stops you from progressing with anything across your personal life and into your work life. And you know, people can have goals, but they never actually get on the first rung of the ladder to get there because the inner critic's saying, well, you know, it's going to probably go wrong, or you've not thought about this, or really shouldn't take a risk like that. And it
Or you're
just,
not good enough to do this, or you
yeah.
don't have what it takes, you don't have enough knowledge, you don't have, you are not.
Yeah, I've definitely challenged myself with some of those things. I've definitely had imposter syndrome with things and just had to tell it, no, we're doing it anyway, carry on. And then actually discovered that I did know something about what it is I was trying to
Yes.
do.
Okay. So I have one final thought that I'd like to leave everybody with. Actually, it's a quote from Carl Jung.
Oh, yes.
And it is, unless you make the unconscious, your shame, conscious. So unless you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate.
Yes. Oh, God, I love that. Yeah, never been a big believer in fate myself.
But you know what? It goes with the whole, and maybe this is another podcast, Emma. It's heaven all the way to heaven and hell all the way to hell, and you make it for yourself. Right? So
And
again,
isn't that it's such an amazing thing, because actually you are empowered to do what it is you want to do. You are like, you hold the power and the keys to everything. You've just got to dig in it to get there.
So once again, unless you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate.
Thank you, Amanda. I think we should leave it there.
Think we should.
Thanks so much for listening today. We really appreciate you. If you liked what you heard today, then please follow or subscribe to the podcast so that you won't miss any episodes. You can do this by going to the show page on your chosen podcast player and click the plus or follow buttons. If you like the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and share with a friend. Don't forget to visit the website thewellsbyshift.com to find out more about our business and life coaching that we offer. And why not come to check out our blog posts, videos, and more? See you next time!